This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Thunderstorms are predicted through the weekend in Des Moines, where people are getting through another day without tap water. The city's main water purification plant was flooded out a week and a half ago. Even after running water is restored, it will likely take a few more weeks until it is drinkable. Earlier today, we phoned Dennis Ryerson, editorial page editor of the Des Moines Register. I asked him if things are any better or worse today in Des Moines.
They're about the same, and in some respects a little worse, and I think they're worse psychically more than anything else. We learned at 6 o'clock this morning that the water system is not being recharged at the pace that they had hoped. Some reason at 3 o'clock in the morning they lost pressure. They don't know if it was because of a water main break or whatever, but that means essentially that the downtown area won't be back on service until tomorrow at the earliest. And some areas of the city won't be served with water until the weekend.
So has anybody gotten water yet?
Nobody has water. They're trying to provide water to the water main so they can provide water for the hydrants in case they have a fire problem. They want to make sure that everybody all over town has equal fire protection. So that's why they want to get the whole system recharged before they give anybody permission to turn on the valves in their homes or businesses. But they're just having more of a problem putting the water back into the system, which means that for many workers, you don't have air conditioning. For people in homes, you still have water for bathing, for washing clothes, for washing dishes. You have to go to one of 80 or 90 water distribution points around the city to get water for drinking. And even then, you have to boil what you get because the containers aren't foolproof in terms of their contamination. It's just a real headache, and it's going to continue. And I said it was a kind of a psychic low today because people have been so desperately waiting and hoping for some good news. Mm-hmm. And we hoped today to get the good news that the downtown area would be the first area to be receiving water, and yet it's going to be another day. So I think people are really getting weary over this whole thing.
How have you been getting by without running water?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I've been going to one of the distribution points and picking up water. I have a camp shower system that I use. It's an H2O bag that you normally hook up to a tree. I'm lucky. I've got a little stream that runs outside my house. So I go out to the stream, get a bucket of water, and I've got a little camp pump purifier, and I can get enough fairly clean water to take a shower with that. It takes me about 45 minutes for the whole process from beginning to end. It's a hassle. But I'm able to get through, and I'm also able to flush my toilets with that water. Other people don't have that luxury. Who would have thought a stream beside your house would have been thought of as a luxury in terms of a water supply? But I've got it, and other people don't. The worst part is just dealing with the, you know, it's unsanitary. You can't clean your house as much. You have to make sure water is boiled before you drink it. It just takes, it's longer to go through normal life processes. And then when you get to work, in our newsroom, it's easily into the 90s. They've got fans all over the place. They've taken out windows that had been sealed. One of them broke in the process of taking it out to try and provide fresh air. The company brings in refreshments, water, food, cold drinks, things like that, and those are very much appreciated. But it's still drudgery to work in an office where it's so stultifyingly hot. We have to go down four floors to get to Kaibo's, parked in a loading dock area for restroom facilities. And all of this is just kind of wearing on people.
It must be really disorienting to be in a major American city that is so devastated. It's like our image of a third world country where the American planes fly in aid and bottled water, except it's in the middle of America.
Well, the ironic thing was Bangladesh has offered help.
Was that right?
And, you know, that's a country that's subjected to annual floods by itself. And
what kind of help do they offer?
They're offering tea and jute to help, you know, jute for bags, for sandbags and tea. I don't know where that stands right now, but apparently the embassy in Washington made an announcement that they were prepared to provide aid. The Israeli government has offered a water purification plant for Des Moines. A lot of things are happening that are very generous, but it is bizarre being here. Not quite as bizarre as it was when I woke up a week ago Sunday, got a call from a friend. I wasn't aware of the severity of the problem. And she offered, I had some guests staying with me, and she was aware of that. And she said, we could all go to her place. She lived in a suburb west of Des Moines. And said, we could go to her place for breakfast and showers. And I said, well, why? And she said, well, you don't have any water or power. Sure enough, I looked at my alarm clock, and there was no power, and we had no water. That was the first I'd heard about it. I came downtown, and downtown was one of the most eerie places. There was nobody down here. There were no lights. Walked into a dark newspaper building. There were no computers. Nothing was operating. A bunch of editors were huddled in front of some windows in a corner of the newsroom, trying to decide how to put out the next day's newspaper. And that was a really eerie day, and that continued for a spell. Businesses put sandbags in front of their doors and plastic in front of their doors, and to walk downtown in what normally is a quite active place and to have no activity and have sandbags all over the place, it is indeed like after the bomb or during some war, only there's no gunshots. It's almost frightening and certainly quite a sad situation to be in.
How much water was there in the heart of the city?
The heart of the city wasn't hit. There was an industrial park area south of downtown that was hit. Another industrial park area north and a little bit east of downtown was hit. Some residential damage, severe residential damage in parts of Des Moines and in West Des Moines. I think they're talking like something like 1,300 homes severely damaged in the area, several dozen totally destroyed by the flooding. And to go through some neighborhoods, particularly in West Des Moines, an area of West Des Moines called Valley Junction, you drive by house after house after house, and in front of each house are these piles of what were once prized possessions that are just now worthless, and they're just waiting for the city crews to come up, pick up their old furniture, TV sets, whatever destroyed by the flood. The one thing, a lot of people have the impression that the whole city is flooded, and that really isn't the case, particularly now. The waters have receded quite a bit. Most streets are open and all of that. Most of the city never was really in the floodplain or in danger. And surprisingly, a large number of services are continuing. Movie theaters are open. Most restaurants are now open. Things are kind of back to normal, except for the worst inconvenience, which is just not having water.
No, I know people at the beginning were advised not to go to work, but you had to go to work all along to put out the paper. What were you up against putting out a paper with no water or electricity?
Well, it meant we had no computers to provide our national, international news or to process the news that we normally generate within our newsroom. We had no production facilities available to us. We had no printing presses available to us. We had nothing. Somebody once jokingly said in the newsroom, well, how fast can you write? Because we were looking at starting from scratch. We were able to cobble together a week ago Sunday arrangements with a weekly newspaper that is operated in Indianola, a newspaper that's owned by the Des Moines Register, and that's south of Des Moines, about 20 miles. And they were able to do production for us on Macintosh computers. We set up a satellite newsroom in a hotel west of Des Moines, and that's where most of the newsroom staffers operated on that Sunday. And then there were a core group of editors downtown just trying to coordinate the whole thing. I wrote an editorial. I wrote it on an old manual typewriter and dictated it to Indianola, where the production crews were. The paper was produced in Indianola, at least the pages. And the page negatives were then flown to Iowa City, where the Iowa City Press Citizen ran off 100,000 copies of an 8-page newspaper for the Des Moines Register for, I believe it was Monday, July 12th. And that was our flood newspaper. It was 8 pages, no advertising, just all flood coverage, locally generated, no wire copy, no news from outside of Des Moines. That was all we were able to provide.
Were people able to buy it?
We were able to deliver only to the Des Moines area and the suburbs. Our normal daily run is around 190,000 newspapers, and we have quite an outstate circulation, and we weren't able to provide that paper to anybody else in Iowa. It quickly became a collector's item, and we're going to be rerunning that newspaper for people who have requested copies.
What was it like to have so much of the national press in Des Moines while you were struggling to get out your paper?
Well, we're kind of used to that in many respects because of the caucus system, which brings the national press to Des Moines and Iowa every 4 years. So it's not unusual to have you know, the National Press Corps flooding the place, pardon the pun. I think it was frustrating a little bit when President Clinton came to town a week ago yesterday, because he came to look at our flood and to be, you know, commenting on our flood, and it was a real high, I think, for a lot of the people to see him here. There was some criticism, I know, that, you know, why does the president have to be at every major disaster? But it does give those people who are so frustrated by things, it gives them a lift to know that, that somebody at the highest level cares and is here. That was a great lift, but it was frustrating for a lot of journalists because, you know, it was nothing for Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw or Peter Jennings or the others to get an interview with the president and be close to him. And the whole system is set up almost more for the National Press Corps than it is for the local press corps.
What does the Des Moines Register look like now?
Looks a little strange. We now are printed on the presses of the Wall Street Journal's production plant. Their Midwest edition is printed in Des Moines. And the Wall Street Journal has a wider web newspaper than the Des Moines Register, so our pages look pretty much the same, except there's this white space on both sides. And some people joke that that's where readers can put their written comments on our reporting. But it looks a little bit unusual. Our deadlines have been moved up. We're not able to get as late-breaking news in because of the need to get the paper out. It's also because the journal isn't able to handle all of our circulation, and we're still using the Iowa City newspaper to print some of the papers for our outstate circulation. And to get those page negatives to Iowa City in time for them to be printed and so the paper can be distributed the following morning, we've had to move our deadlines up considerably. So we're not able to get as late-breaking news in. And we're still providing page after page after page, 16 pages or so a day of flood coverage.
Has the Des Moines Register returned to its regular size?
We're back to our... Yes, we're back to our full size in terms of the
number of pages.
Amount of news space that we have. If anything, we've got more because of the need to tell this extraordinary story. And we're also back to our full circulation. All of our regular subscribers are now getting the newspaper.
You're just joining us. My guest is Dennis Ryerson, editorial page editor at the Des Moines Register. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Dennis Ryerson is my guest, editorial page editor at the Des Moines Register. I know, like in San Francisco and in Los Angeles, people always seem braced for the big one. They're aware that there might be an earthquake. People somehow reconcile themselves to living with that possibility. Is that true of floods in Des Moines? Do people have the possibility of flood in the back of their mind?
I don't think for most of us we did. Certainly nobody thought we'd lose the water system. When that treatment plant was built not far from the Raccoon River, by the way, we get our water from the Raccoon River, they looked at the worst case flood that they had had, and they added several feet above that when they built the levee system around the water treatment plant. In more recent years, they added on to that. Nobody knew. Nobody expected the kind of flooding we received, which they're now saying was probably within the 500-year flood range, which would mean be the worst flood that you would expect on average within a 500-year period. Nobody expected that. Now, there were some people in the lower-lying floodplain areas that have had flooding in, say, 1990, and a couple of years before that. It hits rather regularly. There is a plan that the Corps of Engineers have put together for a new levee system that would protect a lot of those homes and businesses, particularly in West Des Moines. So those people have become accustomed to it, in a sense. But for the rest of us, there was no way we ever expected anything as bad as what we received. And certainly, again, nobody expected to be without water for 2 weeks, and certainly not without drinking water for more than a month. And that's the situation that we're faced now, 250,000 people without any water for 2 weeks and no drinking water for up to a month.
A lot of people have been saying, well, we're learning that you can't build a city in the path of a mighty river, that the river must have its way. Are you finding stories like that a little bit smug, you know, when the reported are said by people who live far away?
I think that's true. As one of our columnists wrote, and this came up on one of the network Sunday morning programs a week or so ago, and as he pointed out, these people who are raising these questions are these network stars who make $20,000 in one speaking engagement. Some of the homes in these floodplains are only worth a little bit more than $20,000. A lot of these people living in the floodplains are not wealthy people. They're people of modest means, and they really can't afford to live someplace else. Otherwise, they would. And for them, it's the only place in town where they can find affordable housing. And now maybe in the future, we're going to have to come up with plans that will gingerly help these people to relocate someplace else. Maybe instead of putting this money into disaster assistance, we ought to be putting it into relocation assistance to help these people find housing outside the floodplain and return floodplain areas into more of a natural state where we can use them as parks and public purposes. And when they do flood, then we don't have such huge loss to take care of. But you're not going to pick up the whole downtown of Des Moines and move it someplace else.
As many people have pointed out, the Midwest has had rain of biblical proportions. And, you know, and speaking of biblical, Randall Terry, the founder of Operation Rescue, the anti-abortion group, has been saying that the flooding is the wrath of God. It's
right.
God's punishment for all the abortions that have been performed in the country. I'm wondering if you're seeing a lot of apocalyptic thinking now.
Well, there has been some of that, and I've heard Terry's comments. I've heard other people saying the same thing. It's God's revenge. I find that very ironic because Iowans, of all people, are not the kinds of people who are fast livers. You know, this is not Sodom and Gomorrah here. This is home and family. I mean, Iowa is a place where, you know, families spend a lot of time together, where community means a lot, where church attendance is high. I mean, you know, if this is God's wrath, it's certainly unfair to hit upon Iowa of all places. Not that we have a stake on morality in the country. I don't mean to say that. But again, Iowans are pretty clean livers, and I think that's kind of ironic that they're saying now that this is the revenge that we're getting.
I'm wondering if you or people you know are feeling very, very depressed, not just because of all the damage that's been done, not just because of the lack of water and electricity, but also because rain and more rain can really, really damage your spirits.
This has been the lost summer. I mean, people usually don't move to the Midwest for the weather. Winters here are dreary, they're long, and we're in that kind of area. We don't get enough snow where you can play in it and have a lot of fun with it. But we get enough that it's an inconvenience. And so, you know, you kind of just put up with winter. And, you read, you go to movies, you do indoor kinds of things. It's just not an area that's conducive to outdoor winter recreation. And so you live for the summer. And, you know, you hope along about the end of April or May that you've got some pleasant weekends. You can go out, you can bike, you can do outdoor activities of all sorts, play tennis, whatever. And this year, it's never happened. There's no question it's been a real, real downer. People are just getting fed up with it. And then when we had the flood, the first couple days, there was something energizing about it. I mean, this all of a sudden became a great adventure. And it was kind of, in a way, this really sounds ironic. It's horrible for the people affected. It's horrible in some ways for all of us. But in some ways, it provided a little bit of a lift of energy. We could all work together now. We had something really dramatic we had to overcome. And your spirits kind of raise when sometimes you're faced with adversity. But now it's getting real old again. And particularly now when people think, well, we've gone through this. We ought to be able to get some kind of reward. Well, what's the reward we're facing this week? Forecast says 5 more days of rain.
Right. What's your mood like?
Well, I think I'm like a lot of people. I'm just weary. I'm tired of putting up with no running water. I've got clothes that need to be washed. I've got dishes that need to be washed. I'd like to be able to take a long shower. We have RAGBRAI coming up next week, which is the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride across Iowa. This is an event that's been going on for more than 20 years, and it attracts as many as 10,000 people who start out on the Missouri River and then ride their bikes across the state to the Mississippi. And it's kind of a moving party, a moving happening in many respects. It's a wonderful time for small towns in the state to show off themselves to people from outside the state. It's a great fun event. I'm going to be riding for several days next week. And at one point, there was consideration that we may have to cancel it. But when that great bicycle parade rolls through a town, when you've got up to 10,000 people rolling through a town of 2,000 or 3,000, has quite a bit of impact. And the communities plan for months this event and how they're going to handle it. Not only how they're going to handle it, but how they can they can use it as an economic boost, because a lot of the organizations, churches, community clubs, and whatever, provide food and refreshments and whatever, and it's looked at as an economic generator for the towns that the bicycle route covers. But I think things like that help. They're talking about several events in Des Moines, concerts. Our AAA baseball team returns to town this week. They've been on an extended road trip. And there was some talk about maybe postponing their return. But as the mayor said, I need a good night down at the ballpark. We need something to have some fun. So I think that's what people are starting to concentrate on now. A lot of people are still mopping up, cleaning up, throwing away things. It's a very dreary thing that they're having to go through. But we're also looking for some ways that we can lighten the load. And I think we need to have that down the path, some way to think, well, we can still have some fun. And that's what I'm trying to do personally. I'm looking forward to going up to Sioux City on Saturday and beginning the bicycle ride on Sunday.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Dennis Ryerson is editorial page editor of the Des Moines Register. We spoke earlier today. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.